This is episode 217, recorded August 18th, 2014.
Greetings, Aquariumaxers.
Hello, once again.
So who have we got lined up for today?
We have Mike in Oregon, as a Google Voice message, and Sean in Asheville, and then we have two YouTube contributors, Kevin and Cuda FX.
Okay.
So.
Cool. So we'll start with Mike, right?
Let's start with Mike. Yes, we'll listen to his message.
Okay. I think it's because it's two-part and their two parts are kind of somewhat not related. We'll do one and then we'll talk about it and do the other and talk about it. How's that?
Okay.
Okay. So let's do the first one.
Hi, Aquariumax. This is Mike, the cichlid guy from Oregon. Just calling to give you guys an update. Last week we were able to purchase a 125-gallon tank from a guy who was actually a cichlid breeder in our area, and it was that I just had the fish taken out of it, and he sold it to us for $275, which I think is a pretty good deal. It had stand and everything, and it also has a Rena Filstar canister filtration system, which leads me to my next question for you guys. I'm fairly familiar with the hang-on backstyle filters, which I've had in the past. However, I'm not too familiar with the ins and outs of this filter, which is, based on what I've been able to read on the internet, it's the biggest model that Rena Filstar makes. I don't know the model number off the top of my head, but it's fairly large. Anyway, so I was wondering if you guys might have some thoughts on the pros and cons of that style filter. I've been listening to Petfish talk, and they seem to be very biased towards the BioWheel hang-on back style filter, so they don't really talk about this style filter. So anyway, I was just wondering if you could maybe give me some thoughts on that. I'd appreciate it, because I really don't know. All right? Thanks for your help. Bye.
Okay. Well, that's a... Oh, yeah, that's a really good deal.
Yeah,
to get a 125-gallon tank like that, especially when it's already cycled, comes with the stand. Yeah, that's really nice. You could get a really, really interesting community of Mbunas going in there. Really, really nice. And it sounds like the filter, the Rena Filstar filter, is a pretty good filter from what I know. I don't have any personal experience with it. I haven't really done a lot with canister filters, but... You were asking about the pros and cons of different types of filters. One problem, potential problem with canister filters is because they have an intake tube somewhere in the tank that pulls water through, you know, and out of the tank down into the filter. By the time it gets all the way down and through all the different media, some of the oxygen can get depleted. So it may not have, you know, when the water goes back into the tank, it might not have a lot. But there are things, some of them have... Some of the canister filters have ways to combat that, and so on. But anyway, that's one thing to think about. But in general, for large tanks, they're a very popular choice, and I think with good reason. They're good for moving a lot of water. They're good for being able to do maintenance. Most of them have a way you can flip a shutoff valve. I'm not sure about this particular brand and model, but let them have a shutoff valve so that you can kind of flip that valve, do maintenance on the filter where water's not running through it, because you can imagine how difficult that would be.
Right.
And then, you know, change media, whatever, and then close it back up, flip the valve, and start it back up again. So maintenance is simplified that way. But you don't have, you know, you may have the issue of a little bit, the water could have some oxygen depletion when it goes in. One way that that's often combated is a spray bar on the output back into the tank. You use a spray bottle and it agitates the water as it goes back in, and that can help with that. So those are just a few thoughts, not a lot, but any of you out there, any Aquariumaxers with first-hand experience with the Rena Filstar canister filter, can give us some more insights into how that might affect things. So let's listen to the next message.
Hey Aquariumax, it's Mike again. It's another one of these two-part messages. Hey, I listened to your most recent episode, and you guys were discussing, you know, store clerks and people giving advice in the pet shop and all that. I just thought I'd throw in something. These cichlids that I purchased from a local pet store, it's kind of a regional chain, I guess you could say, and I, you know, wasn't that knowledgeable about cichlids, and the employee who sold me the fish assured me that that I could put up to four of these African cichlids in my 20-gallon tank without a problem, which, as I've learned the hard way now, that's not possible. It's not a good idea, you know. But, yeah, I sure wish someone had stepped in and gave me some better advice on that, because the store clerk was obviously not very knowledgeable about these fish. One other quick note, as I said in my previous message, we purchased a 125-gallon tank that was already cycled, and the fish have been in there for about 6 days now, and they're doing great. They're not fighting anymore. They actually get along. It's amazing. And I've been testing the water every day with my master test kit. Pulls great, nitrates, everything is perfect. So I'm very glad for that. My wife is happy, and the fish are happy. So, all right, that's my message. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Okay, well, I think that's a good, how can I say, a good perspective to get on giving advice in an aquarium store. Mike wishes he would have had some.
Would have saved him a lot of trouble.
He wishes someone would have stepped in. So it's good to get it from that perspective, too. I like that.
Mm-hmm. Who was it last? Was it Tom last week that said he usually just asks people, what do you have at home? What fish do you have at home, to strike up a conversation?
I don't think it was Tom. I think it was... Maybe it was Greg in Jamestown, maybe.
Oh,
I honestly am not sure. We had a lot of good comments on it last week.
I really liked that idea.
Yeah, it was a good idea. And here's another thingy. Mike was saying that he has two fish in the 125, okay? And that they're doing well right now. And that's cool. That's really cool. But I'm not entirely sure it will last, and I'm not entirely sure it won't. Here's the interesting thing. Because fish do have individual piscinalities, you never know. I mean, once in a while it'll work, especially with such a large tank if they have plenty of hiding places. But there will be other occasions when they'll be fine for several months and all of a sudden, wham, they'll attack each other. And one of them will be dead before you even know it. I had that experience in a setup we had years ago with mbunas, and everything was fine for a long time. I mean, the fish... You know, they displayed at each other and they had their little tussles, but nothing really violent. And then one day, all of a sudden, one of the fish lost its tail, and I isolated that fish. And the next day, another fish was dead. The whole thing had just changed, and it could change in an instant. And especially when you've got two fish, because if one fish decides that it's angry, it has one other fish to take everything else out on. And even a 125-gallon tank is not big enough for it to hide if it does feel like that. So,
which is not to say that you can't keep cichlids in 125.
Right, no, that's a perfect tank to make a population of, you know, keep a lovely community of mbunas, but I would suggest adding more fish to it. Yeah, I would, honestly.
That's a fun solution.
It is. I would do it this way. This is the often suggested method, and in this case, you already have two fish that may have established territories already. So I would say go out and buy six individuals of four, five different species if you're into that. Or if you'd rather keep fewer species, get, you know, more individuals of each species.
Did you mean four or five individuals? What?
Well, see, if...
If you want four or five different species, how many individual fish of each species do you get? Just one?
Six.
Six of each species.
Six of each species, yeah.
Okay.
And with a tank that big, you could easily get four or five. As long as the tank cycled and can still handle it. You did say the tank was cycled, so if the tank had a pretty big bioload and can still handle it, then you'd get... And you'd get young ones, of course. So it would be more likely to be able to handle it. Young ones, and if you got... You know, if you're going to get four or five different species, or even six different species, you could probably handle it in a tank that big. Get six individuals of each, or if you don't want as many species, just get more individuals. So, like, get 12 individuals of each species.
Of two species.
And get baby ones that are about the same size, and put them in there. But before you put them in there, rearrange the decor in the tank so that
they have to fish, re-pick out their territories.
The adult fish that are already in there, the larger fish that are already in there, have to pick out new territories at the same time. It's a good way to help limit aggression against the other fish. And the fact that there'll be so many of them will also help too. And then as they grow up, you'll get a real interesting community going. Of course, you do have the issue with quarantining, but if you still have that 20, well, then you have the cycling issue all over again. Kind of tricky. Sometimes you have to decide whether, you know, what's the lesser of two evils. And I have done that on occasion. But anyway, that's what you want to do in terms of, you could, in terms of getting a nice community going in there that's less likely to end in an eventual battle. For example, I had two Mbunas that were, when I got them, they were very young. They were only about an inch long. I didn't know at the time, this was a long time ago, they were, I believe the scientific name has changed now, but they're Kenyai, and they are pretty aggressive. One of them started turning into a male, or he started exhibiting male characteristics, changing color and so on, and they just started being super aggressive, and I had to remove them from the tank. But for the several months before that, they had been perfectly fine. So just to, you know, you get the Dr. Jekyll, Mr. Hyde phenomenon going with Mbunas sometimes. So though I really hope it works out and that you get to keep those fish, I would suggest that the easiest way to make that happen would be to get other fish to put in there.
And switch the territories around.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, yep. But that's a fun solution because then you get more fish.
Right.
Okay.
And thanks for sharing.
Yeah. Should we go to Sean in Asheville?
Yeah. You know, he was going to redo some things in his tank that he sent us the video of last week with the corys in it and all the baby corys and the beautiful planted tank with all the stem plants and everything. And he was thinking about cutting out the stem plants because they're just growing too fast and so it's too much maintenance.
Mm-hmm. But he sent us a picture.
Yeah. And the picture is from the top view. It's kind of an interesting view. I like it. Of a batch of eggs, a clutch of angelfish eggs. So he decided not to pull the plants. And then I went to his Google Plus page, which is where the picture is hosted, and looked at that. And he said the eggs disappeared, but the male's over in the corner fanning something. So that could mean several things. Could mean the eggs got eaten. Could mean the eggs hatched and were moved.
Why would it mean that the eggs got eaten? Why would he be fanning something if the eggs got eaten?
He could be just preparing a site, but if he's fanning very diligently, it's possible that there are fry there.
That would be cool.
Never know.
Why do they fan?
Fanning does a lot of things. It helps make sure oxygen is getting to the eggs. It can help make sure detritus doesn't settle on them, things like that.
Do they fan the eggs or they fan the fry?
Both.
Oh.
I think they especially do it with eggs in young fry, but when I've spawned cichlids that spawn on a surface like that, I have on occasion thought that the eggs had been eaten because they had disappeared, but then I'd find one or more adults over in the corner fanning something and find that they're a little fry. They're just not as visible.
Well, that would be really cool.
Yeah, and I love cichlid fry. I have had angels lay eggs, but I haven't really tried to go that route for so long. When I was like 13 or 14, I had angels that would spawn all the time. I never got babies out of the eggs, and whether it was because they were two females or it was because there was something going on in the tank, I don't really know. But they would spawn all the time, and I never got any eggs out of it. A lot of times they would spawn on the heater, and then the eggs would cook. I remember that. That would annoy me to death. But then I put plants in there, and I'd put pieces of slate, and they'd spawn on those, but then the eggs would disappear and whatever.
They just eat them.
Somebody was eating
angelfish. I thought angelfish weren't very good at
parental care.
Parental care, unless they were wild caught or closer to wild caught.
Well, because they have been modified and they haven't been selected for parental care. They've been selected for, you know, morphology, their physical appearance.
Mm-hmm.
They're not the greatest parents in the world. They can sometimes do it, and it depends on the strain and whatnot. But yeah, they're not the best. You know, if you get fish like, say convict cichlids, which have their own problems and, you know, they're not worth a whole lot in terms of resale value or anything, but they've been bred to breed because that's why people get them, because they breed. And so you get like ones that are 3/4 of an inch long that are spawning and they're able to raise the eggs and successfully, things like that. It's kind of crazy. As it has been described before, I think it was an Aquarium Fish International magazine, they will breed in wet cotton. So anyway, I digress, I guess, but I hope to hear some good news about these angels.
Should we pick the picture up?
Yeah, we'll put the link to the picture up so you can check it out.
Okay, so we have some YouTube comments.
Mm-hmm. We do indeed. That must be the YouTube comment chime.
You will know that it is time to listen to the YouTube comments when you hear the chime.
Like this.
Ting. Okay. Anyways, the first one is from Kevin, and it's about the beta video when mm-hmm. we read the betas. And he was saying he has some beta fry, right?
Yep.
Yep. And he says, the beta fry have just hatched and are all vertical swimming now. Once they become horizontal swimming, I need to remove the male beta. After which, should I turn the tank light off at night or continue to leave it on? If so, when can I turn it off? Another thing, should I do water changes during the first 2 weeks?
Okay. Good questions. I think when we spawned our bettas, and I'm sure you'll find a variety of opinions on this among people who breed bettas, I think what we did is we started turning the tank light off after the male had been removed. So the fry were free swimming for a day or so. We took the male out, and at that point we began turning the light off at night. Prior to that, we had left the light on every 24 hours.
And why is that?
We had left it on 24 hours because I believe it was Carlos who told us this, Carlos in New York, that mm-hmm. That he had encountered this more than once. And I could be wrong who was saying it, but I think it was. If he left the light off, a lot of times the beta would end up eating the eggs, the male.
Because it was dark and he didn't know what he was doing.
I don't know why, but I just
switches off his parental care button.
I don't know why. I can't really speculate as to why, but I think it was Carlos who said that. But anyway, we decided to leave it on until he left.
Until he was done.
Until he was gone. And then I think we just turned it off at night. We put it on a timer.
Okay. And then water changes.
Water changes during the first 2 weeks. What we did, I think we left the lights on. I mean, not the lights. The water changes. We left the water changes. We didn't do water changes during the first 2 weeks. What we did was add a little fresh dechlorinated water, of the same temperature, to the tank. Maybe a quart.
To make up for evaporation. Day.
To make up for evaporation and kind of dilute the waste, but mm-hmm. just did it slowly and gently, and made sure it was very near in temperature to the original water, and just added that, I think it was about a quarter day, for a number of days. And then when we got to 2 weeks, we started changing water with, the rigid airline tubing on the end of a normal piece of airline tubing.
Okay.
Yep.
So, good luck with that, Kevin. And last one for today is CUDA Effects. I don't know. But they're commenting on the bubble surfing Opayula video.
Yes, our little Hawaiian shrimp.
I love this one. If you guys haven't seen this video, it makes me laugh. It's very cute. We noticed one time the little rigid tube.
Uplift tube.
Mm-hmm. It had air bubbles going up through it. The shrimp were going down to the bottom of it. And, getting shot out by the bubbles and then swimming straight back down and doing it again. They're like, woohoo, this is great!
They seem to be entertained by mm-hmm. it.
So we made a little video and put the surfing music on it, and
mm-hmm.
it was cute. Anyways, so this person says, oh, this just cracks me up. I really just gave up making any sense of the shenanigans that little invertebrates are constantly pulling off. Right now, dozens of tiny little disc snails are surfing on the roots of duckweed that are floating on my tank, moving in circles.
Probably the filter is moving them mm-hmm. or something.
And one fairy shrimp is aiming for the record of pulling around the longest poop in my history of caring for odd little aquatic fish. He says, P.S. A colony of Halocaridinia rubra,
which is Opayula,
mm-hmm, is one of the things that I would really love as an aquarium lover. Dwarf shrimps are cute, but Opayula just have something special about them. They are so petite and so active and still live longer than any little freshwater shrimp I know about.
Much lower maintenance, too. They're amazing that way. Yeah. Well, if you're really interested in getting some, let me know, because
we sell some periodically.
When I have plenty, I get population explosions once in a while. I have to thin the herd a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll sell them. So we probably have enough that we could sell you some if you're really interested in getting some, so there you go.
Maybe next time we should make an announcement on that video or something.
Yeah.
Speaking of announcements.
Oh, is it time?
I think it's time.
Okay.
This is exciting.
It is pretty exciting.
You guys are gonna love
this. I think
it's
exciting, yeah. Okay. For a long time now, we've been working on a top secret project.
Although it has nothing to do with the government.
No. Or conspiracies or tinfoil hats or anything like that.
Yep. No aliens.
But the project is just about to come to fruition. So we thought we'd share it with you a little bit, because it is very much aquarium related, this project. Should we tell them what it is?
Yes, just spit it out.
Okay. I have written a book, an e-book, on live foods. The first of hopefully a number of books that I will write on this topic. But this one is basically some easy live foods culture. The book is called The Aquarimax Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods.
Which is pretty self-explanatory.
Yeah. And it's done, essentially. I mean,
we're just working on getting it listed on places like Amazon and the iBookstore and Barnes & Noble, so that you can all rush out and buy it!
It's self-published, and we're just working on the specifics there, but essentially it's written, it's illustrated, it's got links to videos, and some of which...
I think this is a really cool thing, is it does. I mean, he's got it all written out, but then it's got links specific to the book, to videos.
Some of them are exclusive links.
Mm-hmm.
Some
so
of them
you can't get them unless you have the book.
Well, people could work it out, but they're not just...
Only if they were naughty.
Yeah, but anyway, it's got some that are some links to videos that I just have posted publicly on my YouTube channel, and some that are a little bit more, difficult to get to. Anyway, to help, explain certain things in the book and whatnot. And I hope it's good. But I would say that if you're interested in live foods and you've listened to our podcasts on live foods and you want to try your hand at culturing them, things that you haven't cultured yet, that you could buy it.
Or if you just want to go support Aquarimax.
Yeah, if you're not interested in live foods at all, but you just want to support Aquarimax, you could buy some anyway.
It's not going to be very expensive.
So we will keep you posted, and hopefully in the next week or two we'll have good news saying, oh, here are some links, you can go buy it
right now. It's ready, go buy it, yeah. Tell all your fishy friends.
Yeah. And, put it on your, if you have an aquarium-themed Google Plus channel or Facebook page or, whatever, and you want to spread the word, that would be cool. Mm-hmm. Or you want to retweet it, because we could tweet it and then you could retweet it. Something like that.
That would be good.
That would be fun. And,
all of those, connecting social media kind of things.
Right. So check it out. The Aquarimax Guide to 7 Easy Live Foods.
And we will announce it on the Facebook page when it's officially
up. When it's officially up, too. But this is just the announcement that it's out there.
It's
or
coming.
Will be out there soon. And it's...
We're hoping this week, by the next time...
You hear a podcast, hopefully it will be available. And then, you never know how that's going to go. But we're going to try, and it's done, So it's just the other part now. Anyway, that's pretty cool, isn't it?
So, yay! We're excited.
And, until next time, Aquarimaxers,
may the fish
be with you.